All right, welcome everybody to the second week of our McGillis Rus series. The topic for tonight is going to be a very exciting one because we're going to do Rus. We're profiling the main personalities of the Megillah and figured, why not just start hot? We'll start with Rus. There's going to be so much to say. And just do a quick refresher on last week for those who were here and a quick introduction for those who weren't. The main thing we tried to get across last week was to focus on Megillas Rus's radical claim about Chesed. The Medrash quoted Rabbi Zeira, who said the whole reason why Rus was written was to tell us about the power and the reward of Chesed. And the argument we tried to put forward was that the Megillah gives us one of two extremes, that we're either all in on Chesed, and Chesed particularly means self-sacrifice, means going lifnim mishur hasadin, going beyond what could be realistically expected or demanded. The mitzvah of tzedakah, we often have a bit of a misnomer because we translate tzedakah as charity, and we make tzedakah sound like something which any amount we give is something that we give. But the halacha when it comes to tzedakah has a very different conception. Tzedakah, there's an expectation that we're going to give it. The Gemara talks about being able to enforce the giving of tzedakah, almost like taxes. The tour, when he begins the halacha of tzedakah, talks about Hashem gives us, he deposits a certain amount of money with us, and we need to be judicious and careful with giving it out according to his demands. Tzedakah is not charity. Chesed means going with nimishurasidin, beyond the letter of the law, beyond what one could expect. And we're going to see tonight how Rus fulfills that. We saw last week was the other side of the coin, those who did not go with nimishurasidin, and none of them were bad people. They just were not willing to sacrifice on behalf of others. And the consequence of that is that their names are lost to history. They're completely faded out. Elimelech leaves Eretz Yisrael. Rashi explains at the beginning of the Megillah because he's unwilling to expose himself to financial ruin, it could have been, to support the poor and during a time of famine. He's gone within the first few pesukim of the Megillah. Ploni Almoni, who's unwilling to risk the name of his legacy by marrying Rus. Not only is Ploni Almoni never named, but the joking nickname for him becomes something we use for all time for the anonymous person. Arpa turns her back on Naomi. We can understand why. It's heroic sacrifice that Rus is going to have to perform. And yet Chazal see in there the beginning of the road to ruin for Arpa and her whole family. And the last one we noticed was the person who's in charge of Boaz's field. He's not nasty, at least in the Pesukim, nothing nasty he says to Rus, but he certainly doesn't go out of his way to help her. Once again, yet another unnamed personality. So the claim we saw from Gemara and Megillah, Bava Metzia, sorry, not Lamed, that Rabbi Yochanan says Yerushalayim was destroyed, because we did not go lifnim mishur hasadin, that seems to be exactly the case that the Megillah is out to be. And tonight we're going to talk about Rus. We'll see what exactly her chesed looks like. And there are really two paradigms of two paradigmatic figures of chesed that the Megillah presents to us. Rus and Boaz. And Boaz, we'll talk about Amir Hashem next week. When we talk about Boaz, what's so interesting about the two of them, and hopefully we'll get a sense of this from the profiles that we're about to do, what unites them is the chesed that they perform and the self-sacrifice involved in that chesed. But they're actually very, very different personalities. This is something that's really going to come forward. Even their backgrounds is the most obvious major difference between them, where Rus comes in as this foreign Moaviyah who's attached to Naomi, who when she comes back to Eretz Yisrael is an outcast. So she's an outcast Gioras, the daughter-in-law of an outcast Jewish woman, as opposed to Boaz, who comes into the story as a major central personality. He knows everybody in town. He knows everybody in the fields. And they come into the story from completely different perspectives. Boaz, we'll talk a lot next week how he's going to fill the mantle of Shevet Yehuda, that leadership mantle that's been lost. Rus coming in out of nowhere. So we're going to see what exactly the chesed that Rus does again and again. The sacrifice is involved in it in some detail. Then we'll have to ask ourselves, we read stories of people like this sometimes, where we may see people in life like this. So they're just the most naturally giving people. And it raises the question for us, okay, you know, it's great for that person. You know, rabbits and machlis could serve 100 people at a Shabbos meal. But like, I could be inspired that somebody could reach that level, but what does that have in it for me? Is there any point in the Megillah which shows us the human side of Rus, that shows us the struggling side? Is there a point of vulnerability that we can find? Or does it all just come easily to? If it comes so easily, then there's going to be less for us to learn. And then at the end of the year, we'll zoom out and shift from individual view to a national view to see some of the magnitude of the redemption which Rus is bringing into to Palestine. So let's load up the screen share, and then here we go. The redemption of Chesed. We're going to see the redemption is going to happen both on the individual level, which is going to be the first 84 psukim of the 85 psukim of the Megillah, basically, and then the national redemption as well. Which we're thinking. So here we go. The Chesed of Rus. Megillah Rus is divided up into four prakim in the way we have it. It's definitely not the way that Megillah was originally divided, but it happens to be a helpful division for our purposes because each of the four prakim, while they cover different scenes, the first scene, Rus and Naomi coming back, the second scene, Rus and Boaz's field, the third scene is Rus and Boaz at night, and the fourth barak is the showdown between Boaz and Ploni Almoni. Four different scenes that are covered in four different prakim. One thing that unites all four of them is the chesed of Rus. We have an example of chesed that Rus displays in each of the four prakim, and it is exactly of the self-sacrificing type that we were talking about last week. So let's just begin to get a sense of that now at the beginning of this year. We begin with Perek Aleph, Dveka b'Naomi, where Rus cleaves to Naomi. And I put a few psukim here in the beginning of the Sorshi just to try to give a sense of the degree, the sacrifice to her own self-interest that Rus is going to have to make in order to stick with Naomi. Naomi is extremely open about this. She spends six psukim, which considering the Megillah itself is 85 psukim, that's about 7% of the Megillah. Yes, I had to do the math. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of press that the Megillah gives to Naomi's dissuasion to Rus and to Naomi. And she's very clear and she's exceptionally rational. You don't belong here. Go back to your parents' house, she tells them. I have nothing for you. Lama tilach Naomi? Why would you go with me? Naomi, coming from the world of Bnei Yisrael and Sefer Shoftim that we talked about last week, where everything in Shoftim is quid pro quo. Chesed never appears in Sefer Shoftim. And as a result, by the end of the book, Bnei Yisrael have devolved from the people of Avram Avinu into the people of Canaan. They've devolved into the world of Pilegesh Begiva, where they're resembling Sodom. There's no chesed. Everything is quid pro quo. Naomi still assumes that everybody around her operates in that way. And she says, why would you go with me? I can't give you anything. I can't have any children. Okay, I can't get remarried. I have no, there's no future for me, and there's no future for you. So if you think that you're going to come back with me to Eretz Yisrael, because, well, you know, when you originally married into the family, we were a prominent Jewish family. Now I'm going to go back, and surely I'll be able to take care of you. I'll be able to get you connected. I'll be able to get you husbands, either through my family connections or through me having kids. It's not going to happen. It's not going to work. There's no future for me. So why would you tie yourselves to me? Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. In a couple of weeks, when we get to Naomi, she said is the most, really the only complex personality in Megillah is Naomi. We'll tackle her in a couple of weeks. But at now, just at the simple level, let's just assume that the only reason why she's telling them to go back is because she truly doesn't think it's in their best interests to go with her. It's a very powerful argument. It sways Arpa. Arpa turns around. Arpa goes back. And then the Megillah tells us, Rus davkava. Rus is the first thing she ever does by herself is she cleaves to Naomi. Just in terms of Rus's personality, it could be a little bit surprising. The first time we see Rus speak, she doesn't speak by herself. The first time she does something, she goes back with Naomi and her sister-in-law. You know, she's not breaking out of the crowd. She begins by walking back with two others. The first thing she says is together with her sister-in-law. They said to her, she speaks in tandem with Arpa. We don't get the sense of individual leadership from Rus, but we're always surprised. Rus davka ba, and Nami tells Rus, go back, shuv yachrei v'mteich. You know, some of the Mepharshim note that Nami is very careful. Nami said to Rus, look, Arpa went back el ama ve'el Eloha. She went back to her nation and to her gods. Shuv yachrei v'mteich, go back to your sister-in-law. So that's, you can flag that. You know, is she telling her, literally, just go back to your sister-in-law and that's it? So some of the Mepharshim say. Or is she even saying, go back the whole way your sister-in-law went back, both to her nation and to her gods? But Rus refuses, and Rus says absolutely not. And Rus is well aware of what the sacrifice is going to be. She says, Asher telchi eleich, wherever you go, I'll go. I'm aware we're not going straight to a nice house. You know, we're not going to the lake house. I'm aware. Where you go, where you wander, I'll wander. Asher talini alin, wherever you lodge, I'll lodge. We're gonna stay on the side of the road. We're going to stay in some two-star motel if we're lucky. I know that's the future that's ahead. And that is what I'm signing up for. Vasher tamusi amus v'sham ekaver. Where you die, I'll die, and that's where I'm going to be buried. Rus comes in and she's aware that the comfortable, easy future life that she could have in Moab, where she has a family, where she has connections, where she has resources, where she's grown up and feels a native, she speaks the language and knows the culture, that's all there, and she's turning her back on everything. She's turning her back on a life of comfort, on a life of fitting in order to go to a totally unknown, uncertain future, which really doesn't seem to have any long-term hope at all for the sake of her mother-in-law. We can't emphasize it enough, and we know it intellectually, but we just need to stress the sacrifice that's involved in here. And it's not just Perek Aleph, right? It happens again and again and again. Perek Beis, when Naomi is now back in Beis Lachem, and Naomi is mysteriously passive. She doesn't want to do anything. So Rus tells her, you know, we got to eat. So Rus HaMoaviah says to Naomi, El Chanaba Sedev, Alaktaba Shibalim, let me go and glean in the fields. Now, we romanticize gleaning in the fields. We romanticize the mitzvah of Leket. We imagine it's so nice. You have the farmers, you have the poor. What an idyllic scene, everybody working together. Megillas Rus throws it out the window for us. Megillas Rus shows us what a humiliating step it is for somebody to have to go through the process of Leket. And especially an attractive young woman like Rus. It comes, Boaz tips his hand for us. He shows us what's involved. Because when Boaz faces Rus after she's working in the morning, and he says, I told all the boys not to touch you. So what do we see from there? That Rus is dealing, it's not been a pleasant morning for Rus. If only now Boaz has to come in and say, I told them, leave you alone. And I told them, let you get a drink of water when the workers go to drink. What's Rus been doing the whole morning? Anyone's ever been in on a tiyul in Israel, what's the first thing they tell you? Bring water, you know? Water and a hat. So I don't know if Rus had a hat or not, but she didn't have water. Okay, she's burning in the sun. Everybody, it's physically intense labor for her. There are a million people who are out there. She's being shoved around at best by some of the people who are working in the fields, and those probably are not the highest class members of society. It is physically exhausting, physically and emotionally degrading. You can imagine everybody else there who's working for a living, how they look at her as she's looking to literally pick scraps of grain off the floor. It is a humiliating thing that she is willing to do. The Malbim brings out, not only is Rus sacrificing her physical safety and security and comfort and dignity, but it goes even deeper than that. It says, if we think about Rus's background, so he says, Gam Shahaisa Amuna Ale Tola, what is that? He's quoting a pasuk in Eicha. When Eicha describes the destruction of Yerushalayim, so Yirmiyahu says, "Ochlim l'madanim nashamu b'chutzos." Those who fed on fancy food, now they're collapsing in the streets. Ha'emunim alei tola chibku b'ashpato. Those who were brought up wearing fancy scarlet clothes now are hugging the garbage, trying to find a little bit of food. Malvin points out what Yirmiyahu describes as the unbelievably tragic image of the very wealthy princeling in Yerushalayim, who now is so desperate for something to eat, they're clinging to the garbage, hoping to find something in there. That's exactly what's happening with Rus. Rus leaves the world of riches and comfort and finery to try to pick a couple of pieces of grain off of the floor. Not only that, Shelo chavtza shegam chamota teleich ima. You know, Naomi is physically capable. She's not an old woman by any means. She was able to make the walk no problem all the way from Moab to Eretz Yisrael. She has to cross the desert. You know, if ever taken a drive in an air-conditioned car from Yerushalayim over to the Dead Sea, you know what that walk is like. It's not easy. Naomi is fully capable of walking together with Rus, of working in the fields together with Rus. Points out the Malbim, Rus will have none of it. No bizai, no klima. She doesn't want Naomi to have to go through that. Why not, explains the Malbim? Because Naomi had once had an impressive reputation. Naomi had once been an impressive, wealthy woman in society. The kibla al atzma, Rus accepts upon herself. Shehi teleich v'she'in makirim ota. So I'll go. No one knows me. I was once a princess in Moab, but she at least tells Naomi, look, I'm not as well known in here as you are. It's going to be as embarrassing it is for me, for Rus, it will be 10 times more embarrassing for you. And so not only is Rus willing to do this, she tells her mother-in-law, you stay here. I will work alone. Even though it would be much easier for the two of them to go together. The Malbim has a nice deal. He says, Shal ze amar batomar Rus hamo'aviya. Right? Rus the Moabite said this, because I'm not from here. He t'parnes and chamotah bekavod. So the mother-in-law will stay at home. She'll be sitting at least in some measure of dignity and honor and comfort. And I'll be the one who goes by myself to pick the grain off of the fields. You know, from a certain sense, we could even go a step beyond the Malbim. And we could say, at least Naomi, it might be less awkward for her to go. Yeah, Naomi was once a fancy, wealthy person, but Naomi knows everybody. They're all her relatives. You know, everyone knows what's happening. Rus is a total stranger. You know, if you're about to make a cold call, you know, that's awkward. Rus, she has to go to places where she doesn't know anybody and begin gleaning in their fields. You know, she happens to go to Boaz's field. If Naomi had done the gleaning, she would have known. Oh, Boaz, that's my, according to Chazal, that's my dead husband's nephew. You know, I could go to his field, no problem. I could go to Plony Almoni's field. She knows the player. She knows the connection. She knows her family. She could go straight to them. The truth is, she probably could have just gone straight to Boaz or to Plony Almoni and say, hey, can I have a loan? Can you help me out? She does nothing, though. She does absolutely nothing. We'll talk about this with Naomi in a couple of weeks. She is stunningly passive. She doesn't give an iota of help to Rus. Does Rus complain? Does Rus say, hey, can you step it up? You know, any suggestions you can make, any initiative you can show? No. Rus says, no problem. You stay here. I'm sensitive to the embarrassment that you feel, and I will go and debase and exhaust myself, picking in the fields of random strangers who I've never met, so that you can sit here in comfort. Line of the Malbim. Right? So that's the chesed and parak base. We move to Parag Gimel, and once again, Rus does the same thing. She once again completely sacrifices for the sake of someone else when she goes to Boaz to ask Boaz to marry her. And that alone is embarrassing enough because it is supposed to be, and it is still supposed to be, I think, the job of the man to propose to the woman. But Rus knows that, for whatever reason, we'll try to figure this out next week, for whatever reason, Boaz is not making the move. Boaz is not showing the initiative. So she does... She goes down to the granary instead in what is a pretty embarrassing step for her to do. I mean, it's an exceptionally sexually laden scene. It's extremely difficult to parse what exactly is happening. What exactly was it that Naomi wants her to do? What exactly is that that Rus is doing? But once again, Boaz points out to us what level of chesed and what level of self-sacrifice Rus is doing once again. And it's very important, the truth is, because I think often we think of the story of Rus and Boaz, this is the chesed that we really miss. Because we might think, and Naomi even puts it this way, you might think that Naomi is really doing Rus a solid over here. Because, hey, she's connecting Rus with a wealthy husband. Okay, she's getting Rus economic security. Her husband now is going to be one of the most important people in town. Naomi presents it this way, Pasuk Aleph. Naomi says, Biti halo avakesh lach manoach asher yitav lach. Let me find you some rest, which will be good for you. So Naomi presents this as something that is in the self-interest of Ruth. But Boaz realizes that's not the case at all. When Boaz finds out who the woman is who's sleeping at his feet, so what does he tell her? Vayomer brucha at Lashem biti, itavt chazdecha acharon min harishon. This later chesed that you're doing now is even more impressive than the previous chesed. What is that? Rashi explains, all the chesed to her mother-in-law in the previous parak is being even outshone by the chesed in this parak. Of what? What is so impressive now that's more important than picking in the dirt for some food for your mother-in-law? Levalti lachat achare bachurim imdal imashir. Because you so easily could have gone for one of the younger men as a husband, whether they be rich or poor. Boaz is old. Boaz may be wealthy, he's old, and he's not really attractive husband material, and he is well aware of that. Writes the Ibn Ezra, imdal imashir, shakol avimata bavur yafya. Ibn Ezra says that the pshat is that Rus was exceptionally beautiful, and if she went into the shidduch market, she really wouldn't have had much of a problem at all. She has the physical attractiveness. She has all of the good midos. We'll see when we talk about this the next couple of weeks. Naomi still seems to own Elimelech's field, so there are financial assets that she can bring into the marriage. She's a very impressive catch as a wife. She is. Ibn Ezra points that out. Boaz knows that. So you can go and marry a young, healthy husband. You'll raise a family together. You'll have a nice life together. Ruth actually can make a nice future for herself. And yet she's sacrificing all of it once again. Why? Because she is fulfilling her responsibility to continue the name of Naomi's family. And she knows that to fulfill the role of Ge'ulah, to redeem the field and to keep up the name of her dead, whether it's her dead husband, whether it's her dead father-in-law, or whether it's her living mother-in-law, Rus understands that once again, she is going to sacrifice herself in order to marry Boaz to be able to carry on that family name. So we had the sacrifice and the chesed of Perek Aleph, where she clings to Naomi knowing who knows what the future is going to hold. She has the chesed and the self-sacrifice in Perek Beis, where she gleans in the field for her mother-in-law who's sitting at home. The chesed in Perek Gimel, where she goes after the old man because that's going to be what's good for continuing the family name. And then finally, and maybe the greatest chesed of all, is the chesed in Perek Daled, when she marries Boaz, has a child. Chazal even understand that Boaz is so old, there's even a medrash that Boaz dies that night. And who raises the kid? All of a sudden, the kid becomes Naomi's kid. Rus gives the child to Naomi. Vatikach Naomi as a yeled. And all of a sudden, everyone's saying in town, Yulad ben le Naomi. There's a child to Naomi. What do you mean a child to Naomi? Well, once again, writes the Malvim. Yeah, Naomi becomes the child's adoptive mother. Mari Kraiben says, the reason why the kid's name is Oved, meaning to work, is because the kid is going to carry on his birth mother's legacy. Lamar Zeya Oved is Naomi. This kid is going to be a financial security. He's going to work and he's going to fund Naomi's retirement. He's not funding Rus's retirement. He's funding Naomi's retirement. Naomi is the one who raises him. He's called her son in the Megillah. Why? Because the last and greatest chesed that Rus does, she takes her own child and gives her son to her mother-in-law to raise as her own. The Gemara in Sanhedrin has a line. The Gemara says, anybody who raises an orphan, it is as if they give birth to the person. Whoever raises the child is considered their biological parent. What is the source for that? So first, the Gemara brings the story of Michal, who seems to have raised her sister's children. But then the Gemara says, no, they should learn it from exactly what's happening at the end of the Megillah with Rus. What do you mean? Naomi didn't have the kid. Well, Rus Yalda, says the Gemara. Rus had a child. What does it mean there's a son to Naomi? Rus Yalda, Naomi Gidla. Yes, Rus had gave birth to the child, but Naomi raises him. And that is the fourth chesed, the chesed in Perek Dal. There's just nothing in the Megillah other than Rus giving and giving everything that she has. She gives up herself to her mother-in-law. She then gives her dignity and her physical security to her mother-in-law. She then gives up her marital future for the sake of her mother-in-law. She then gives her own biological child to her mother-in-law. You know, this last one, is reminiscent of someone else who's leading the charge of turning around Bnei Yisrael from the doldrums of Sefer Shoftim. Because Chana, the mother of Shmuel, does exactly the same thing. Chana has a son, and she gives him to the Mishkan. She had promised she was going to do that, and she does. She hands over her son. But at least there, you know, she wasn't having any kids, and part of her tefillah was she promises to Hashem that I'll lend you, I'll give you whatever child you give to me. Here, Ruth was under no obligation to do this, and yes, she does that as well. This child is being born to continue the legacy of my mother-in-law's family. My mother-in-law gets to raise what should be my child. There's nothing in there but giving and giving and giving. Talk about lifnim mishuras hadin. That's the first piece for us to just appreciate about what it means, really on a visceral level. Now, no like major chidushim here, but just appreciating what it is that Ruth is all about. And the next piece of the shir I wanted to highlight as we try to build a picture of the personality of Ruth is to show how she really is a paradigm of what Shammai Zaken says in Perkei Avos, Emor ma'at va'asei harbe, the kind of personality who doesn't say very much, but does a lot. You know, as I'll apply this to Avram Avinu, who's also a paradigmatic figure of Chesed. But let's just give a sense to what degree this idea of Emor ma'at va'asei harbe really captures and characterizes Rus. What I did in the source sheet over here, I'm going to make this a little bit smaller to give a sense, is I just took all the times that Rus speaks in the Megillah. And it was not so hard to do because she only speaks, I believe, six times. There are only six instances when Rus opens up her mouth. And you can see basically each time, whoever she's talking to has a lot more to say than she does. Rus is not a woman of words. So in the first parak, we have the back and forth between Rus and Naomi. And we have to come back to this piece because this piece is the longest piece by far that Rus ever speaks. Yet even that, look how much more Naomi has to say than Rus. Okay? We have to talk more about number two this time. The one exception here, the one time Rus ever speaks more than the person she's speaking to is when she proposes that she'll go out to glean in the fields. I mean, it's still only five words long, but keep this in mind for a couple of weeks when we talk about Naomi. The one time that Rus speaks longer than someone else is when she proposes to go into the fields, and Rus says, go ahead, l'chi biti. Otherwise, Rus is always the one speaking for shorter. Look, you know, she talks to Boaz in Parak Beis. Rus has five lines. She says a couple of things. And Boaz, next week we'll talk about, Boaz has a lot to say. Look how much, just look at the words. Boaz, Boaz talks more right here and right here than Rus ever has a single statement in the whole Megillah. You know, right, Boaz, his first two times he talks to Rus is longer speech than Rus ever makes. You know, Rus goes home from meeting Boaz. She tells Naomi like one line, and Naomi talks some more. You know, Parag Gimel, when it's time to propose the plan in the field, so Naomi says, look, here's the plan, here's what we're going to do. And she talks for one, two, three, four psukim. Here's all we're going to do. And what does Rus say? Kol asher tamri elai ta'aseh. I'll do whatever you say. Rus is not a woman of words. When Rus meets Boaz that night in the field, so she just says one sentence, Anochi Rus amasacha, perasta kenatacha lamascha, ki goel ata. I am Rus, right? Cover your maidservant, i.e. a marriage proposal. And then what's Boaz's reaction? Look how long he goes. Brucha la shem biti, teim chastei chachram and harishon, on and on and on and on. It's normal. Boaz talks. Naomi talks. Rus barely says anything. And the last time she comes home and tells Naomi, oh, you know, she doesn't talk about Boaz accepting the marriage proposal. He says, hey, here's some barley that Boaz gave me. And once again, Naomi talks for longer than Rus does. Rus is not somebody who speaks very much. She's a woman very much of deed, not a woman of speech. Probably not a coincidence that before we ever see her say anything, we see her do something. First when she goes together with her mother-in-law and sister-in-law. And then again, Rus davkaba. Before we ever see Rus say something by herself, before she tells Naomi what she's going to do, we're told what she does. And that is Rus davkaba. And those three words, that first action that Rus has in the Megillah, really characterizes her personality throughout. She's always someone doing. She's not always someone who is speaking. Another crucial element of her chesed personality. Now, there is one notable exception to the general extreme brevity that Bliss has, and that was the very, very first time that we spoke. And I want to just take a couple of minutes to show, because it's in verse, it's poetic. What Rus says there are two poetic pieces in the Megillah. One is Rus, her first statement to Naomi, and then the second one is Naomi's lament, I guess, when she gets back home. So that one we'll talk about in a couple of weeks. But for now, I just want to show you a couple of things about the statement Rus makes. Because the fact that it's definitely in poetry, not in prose, highlights the centrality of Rus's statement over here. And it all gets us to one point. You know, everything here is in parallel. That's classic Atanakh's poetry. So she begins, Al tifki ibi la'azveich, you know, don't either push me or don't insult me, don't harm me to make me leave you. L'shuv me'acharai, to make me go away. I'm not going to, oh, make me leave, I'm not going to go. Ki l'asher telchi eilech, wherever you go, I'll go. V'asher telini olim, wherever you lodge, I'll lodge. Ameich ami, your nation is my nation. Ve'elokayach elokai, your God is my God. Right? It's all a parallel, that's how it always works. V'asher temusi amus, v'sham ekaver, wherever you die, I'll die. And that's where I'll be buried. Ko yaseh Hashem li, v'ko Yosef. Right? Whatever Hashem does to me, and so may he do. That's the way you have a shvua many times in Tanakh. Once again, A-B. Then what's at the very end, where Rus finally stops the parallel and has one powerful line that she just declares? Ki hamaves yafrid b'ni u'b'neich. Right? All that flowery poetry, all that rhythm and all that music and the, you know, they could like talk about the beauty of the poetry, on and on. It's all just a funnel to the tachlis at the end. One powerful statement. And this is not in poetry. Maves yaprid benit benich. Death will separate between me and you. That is what she is all about. At the end of the day, Rus, she can use words if she wants to, but she's not a woman of words. She's a woman of deed, and she is a woman of integrity. She makes commitments and then she follows through on them. Right? She means everything she says over here. So some of the modern Mefarshim point out, even her Shavua is really interesting. She doesn't take an oath almost every time, with one exception. Whenever we have this line of a Shavua, Ko Yaseh Hashem li v'ko Yosef, it's always done with the name of Elohim. Ko Yaseh Elohim li v'ko Yosef. Everyone does that. Shaul swears that way. David swears that way. Shlomo swears that way. Everyone in Nach swears that way. With one exception of Yehonah's son, the only person who uses Yudke Vavke for their oath is Rus. So when Rus opens up, when Rus speaks, there's a ton packed into every word that she says. Right? She's very careful with her words. She's careful what she's saying. But the key idea, Amave Sefer Beni Beneich, that is my commitment. She begins with the action of Rus Davkava, and she means what she says. And I think the third piece for us to take away from Rus's personality, besides just the endless giving, and besides the Amor Ma'at Ma'aseh Harbe, she's a woman of deed, not a woman of endless speech, is her integrity and commitment and her follow-through. And I think we get here a piece that really Yadus has to say about Chesed in particular. There's a beautiful comment by the Medrash, and I think Rus exemplifies it over here. The Pasuk in Tehillim in Perek Hey tells us Chesed ve'emes nifgashu, right? That kindness and truth come together. Static v'shalom nashaku. And there are a couple of midrashim about this, but one really beautiful one in Shmos Rabbah links this Pasuk in Tehillim, where Chesed and Emes are meeting, and then Tzedek and Shalom are kissing each other, to the scene where you have two brothers coming together, Moshe and Aaron, in the beginning of Sefer Shmos. Hashem tells Aaron, go to meet Moshe. They meet, right? You have the pigisha, and then you have the kissing, then you have the nishika. The Medrash, I think, says something awesome. It says, we have this pasuk in Tehillim, Chesed, Emes, Nefgashu, Nifkashu, Tzedek, Vashalom, Nishan, Hashakim. Chesed to Aaron. Who's the exemplar of Chesed? It's Aaron. Shneamar, Ulevi Amar, Tumacha, Virachal, Ish, Chasidacha. So the Urim Tum, the Kohen Gadol, goes to the man of Chesed. The man of Chesed is Aaron, a Kohen. Emes, Zemoshe, Shneamar, Lokin Avdi Moshe, the person who's the Eved, the person who's the servant. Moshe is all about integrity, is all about service. He is the man of Emes. Chesed and Emes, Aaron and Moshe, they come together. Then, Medrash says something very cool, one line later. Rabbi Azariah Omer, Chesed ze Moshe. Flip it around. Moshe is the man of Chesed. Sha'asa Chesedim Yosef. He's the one who takes Yosef out of Mitzrayim, Yosef's bones. Chesed shel Emes, taking care of the dead. The Emes, ze Aaron. Truth is Aaron. Zichsev, Taras Emes, Haisa Befiu. When Malachi talks about Aaron Cohen, the paradigmatic Cohen, he says he had the Torah of truth. So what is it? Is Aaron the man of Chesed and Moshe the man of truth? Or is Moshe the man of Chesed and Aaron the man of Emes? And the answer is, when we talk about leadership, and what's happening here is that this is the moment where the leadership for the nation is being born. Moshe and Aaron are coming together, getting ready to unite to take Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. You can't have one without the other. We can think, oh, somebody is very nice, very generous, but they're flaky. And we know personalities like that. You can't rely on them. They do amazing things, but sometimes they're like so caught up in life that we can't actually count on them to follow through with the things they committed to. And on the other hand, we know people who are real MS personalities. You know, if they say they're going to do something, they'll make sure that they do it. But on the other hand, that makes them so limited, so restricted, so afraid of commitment that you can never actually count on them to do very much because they're so serious and buttoned down, they can't break out of it. I think what the Medrash is telling us here, you want to know about leadership, you want to know about Moshe and Aaron, true chesed and true MS, you can't have a real person of chesed unless you could also call him a person of MS and vice versa. If Aaron is going to be the paradigm of chesed, there has to be someone else out there who can say, no, Aaron is the paradigm of MS. And if Moshe is going to be the paradigm of MS, Lokin Avdi Moshe, you have to have someone else who's going to say he's the paradigm of chesed. In their full form, these two have to come together. And that is something that Rus is a real exemplar for as well. Somebody who gives and gives and gives, and yet simultaneously, when she makes commitments, you know she's going to follow through. Verus dav kaba, hamaves yafrid, beini ubeinech. I am going to do what I said I'm going to do. That is Rus. And maybe like one reason why, what is the name of the child that they have? The child's name is Oved. Yeah, we saw the Mari Crow said it's because that Oved has to work to sustain Nami in retirement. But maybe that's also as homage to this Mida of Rus, the Mida of MS, which he has, Lokin Avdi Moshe, someone who just exists to serve, the honesty and the integrity and the chesed and the generosity, which is exemplified by the Eved, Lokin Avdi Moshe, that is Rus as well. Okay, so far all we've done is build up, right, three pieces of what an amazing role model Rus is supposed to be in the world of chesed. The giving, just now you saw, right, the combination of the giving and the integrity, and just because you give doesn't mean you talk a whole lot about it. But now let's ask that question, okay, you know, what about, was it easy? Maybe she was just one of those people. She was one of the Lamed Vav. So that's why it's, I think, really important for us to notice that once again, but I actually didn't really realize this until literally just now, going through this year, that the comments that Boaz make keep on shedding light, or we've had Boaz shedding light on what it meant for Rus to glean in the field. We've had Boaz shed light on what it means for Rus to propose marriage. Once again, in Parak Beis, Boaz helps bring to light the human side of Rus, by which I mean the relatable side. It's not easy. There's only one point in the Megillah where Rus, who is so quiet and so reserved, there are reasons why Chazal see her as well as an exemplar of Tzinius. She's an exceptionally modest and private and reserved person, almost exclusively. With this one exception, when Boaz does chesed to her, when Boaz invites her to glean in the fields and be left alone, she falls on her face and she bows down to the ground. What else we put on Rus's list of things she teaches us? Okay, I don't know if any of you have ever fallen down your face to thank somebody for something. Maybe I never have. if I did fall down on my face to thank somebody for something, it probably would not have been the chesed of them saying, you can glean my field and I'll get you a cup of water. Like, there are, we all probably have had people, I would hope almost definitely, we've all had somebody do a better chesed for us in life than tell us that we can work unmolested and that we can get a glass of water. Ruth gets that, and she falls on her face. So Ruth shows, besides just the gratitude she has, some of the emotion behind the surface. And it wasn't just that she was being given these things by Boaz, but she's being recognized. She is the stranger. She is the alien. And she feels the alienation. She feels the solitude. She feels the fact that she's apart from everybody else and no one else will recognize her. No one else will relate to her. They all think, referred to her as a Nachriya. And it hurts. Part of her extreme reaction or extreme gratitude is because of the pain that she has had until now. Naomi was absolutely correct. It was going to be brutal for Ruth to go on this path. And she did it and she never complained. But we get a window from what she says in Perek Yud, in Pasuk Yud, as to how hard this is being for her. And then we get a second window a couple of Pesukim later. Boaz continues in his inimitable fashion. He speaks much longer than Ruth does all the time, right? He speaks for two Pesukim. Ruth speaks for two lines. Boaz speaks for two more Pesukim. And Ruth speaks for a couple more, for a couple more lines. She says, Ni Cham Tani. You've comforted me, v'chidibarta alev shefpasecha, and you've spoken unto the heart of your maidservant. If Ruth is being comforted, then that means that she has been in pain until now. Maybe there have been pangs of regret. Maybe there have been pangs of remorse, of second thought. Who knows? And somebody of Ruth's integrity was never going to go back on what she had committed to do. But was she regretting going down this road? It's possible. The Megillah gives us one window into the pain that she has. So yes, she's somebody who gives and gives and gives. But these couple of psukim in the Megillah, we need to flag because the Megillah wants us to know, don't think it comes easy. No, don't think it's like somebody who just has unlimited credit card and they're going to swipe and swipe and swipe and never feel the money coming out of the account. Ruth feels what she's missing. She feels what she's losing. She feels the pain of the sacrifice in every single parak. And it can hurt, and yet she does it anyway, right? It's not that this all comes so easily and naturally to her. It really is sacrifice. And at the same time, I think there's a message for us to appreciate the magnitude of the chesed. You know, Rus is doing all these heroic chesedim in every single parak, but look at the power of a little bit of routine chesed. Just because Boaz mentions her by name and exhibits some common decency in parak bays, that changes Rus's whole world. So you don't need to do the chesed of a Rus. You don't need the sacrifice of a Rus to have the impact of a Rus. I think that's where we see some of the turnaround that Rus gets from this piece of Boaz. So I think we've then built the real personality profile we want of Rus. Somebody who's modest, who's intense, who's quiet, who's full of integrity and generosity and lives for other people, is willing to sacrifice whatever it takes, even as she feels and knows exactly what that means. She doesn't need Naomi to spell out for her what life is going to be like. She knows what it is, and yet she's willing to do it. And now I want to shift the last few minutes of the shiur from the individual component to the national component, because Rus serves as the goelet. She's redeeming. And it's not just on the individual level of redeeming her family or her married family. As we talked about last week with the transition from Shoftim into the world of Malchus, the world of David, Ruth is coming as the national redeemer as well. And as Bnei Yisrael have slid into the world of Canaan, they've slid into the world of Sodom. They've slid into the world by the end of Sefer Shoftim, where there is no chesed. All of the midos of the avos and the imos have gone out the window. And Rus is the one who is gone. Part one, she is one piece, Boaz will be the other, of bringing it all back. And it's not a it's not a coincidence, and Megillah really wants us to know this, that this is coming from somebody from Moab. Because what is Moab? Moab is the heir to Lot. And Lot became the real heir to Sodom. So everything is a total reverse. But Rus is a tikkun for Klal Yisrael, and she's a tikkun for her own ancestor, Lot. And doing so is going to save Bnei Yisrael. And let's take a few minutes to break this down. In Perek Yud Gimel, when Lot leaves Abraham, the scene in many ways is the very similar, but the total opposite of the scene we have with Rus and Naomi. Rus and Naomi, we had the childless mother-in-law and the young daughter-in-law. Avram and Lot, we have the childless old uncle, and we have the young nephew, who really should be acting as an adopted son. They're traveling together, and they're going back to Eretz Yisrael. Right? They're on the road. They're on the road from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael. But this time, the journey doesn't stick. They do not stay together. You know? Rus went on the road with Naomi, and she stayed with her all the way to Eretz Yisrael. Lot leaves. And why does Lot leave? Because he wants more for himself. Lot is somebody who becomes obsessed with self-interest. And while Rus is willing to cleave to Naomi, even though she has nothing, right? Despite having nothing, and Naomi says that, even though Naomi has nothing, Rus stays with her. Lot leaves Abraham for the opposite reason, because he has too much. There's too much property. What does Abraham say to Lot? Let's separate. He pared na me'alai. The idea of separation comes through again and again in these psukim over here. Avram says, let's separate. The Torah says, v'pardu ish me'alachiv. That's how that piece of the story ends, with them separating. Then the Torah brings it back by saying, Hashem tells Avram, achrei pared Lot me'imo, after Lot left. Well, let's think, what was the key line that Rus said, the most important line that Rus ever mentions at the end of her speech to Naomi, when she says, Hamaves yafrid b'ni b'nech. Death will separate me from you. Right? That's what's going to separate Rus from Naomi. Here is having too much money and the pursuit of more, which leads to the hafrada, the separation between Avraham and Lot. Now, Ibn Avraham had proposed to Lot in the original two-state solution, the original way to split up the land. So Avram had said, Im hasmol ve'imina ve'mayamin ve'asmi'ila. If you go left, I'll go right. And if you go right, I'll go left. Now, in our minds with modern maps, we think of right and left as being east and west. But in Tanakh, you're facing forward. You're facing the sun. You're facing east. And so the right is always going to be your south, and the left is the north. Avram is proposing, let's split Eretz Yisrael along a north-south axis, and you can choose the Galil, or you can choose Yehuda and the Negev. What does Lot do? Lot, you know, he takes choice C. He takes the choice that wasn't on the exam. He says, he looks forward. He sees the Jordan River Valley. He sees all the way in there in the east. Hey, what's that beautiful Jordan River Valley? Sodom. I'm going to go over there. Sodom was not on Avram's proposal. He said, take the north, take the south. So Lot says, I'll actually take the east. In other words, Lot totally splits from Avraham. He physically leaves Avraham. He leaves Avraham's plan. He leaves Avraham's legacy. And he goes, of all places, to Sodom. It's a total split. The Medrash flags this. And if we don't smell the echo of the Megillah here, then we're not doing our job that Chazal wants us to do. When the Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah says, Vayisa Lot mikadem, Lot travels east. Hisia atzmo mikadmono shel olam. He left the first of the world. Amar, Yafshi lo be'Avram, lo be'Elokav. I can't be together with Avraham, and I can't be together with Avraham's God. What's the Medrash echoing? Amich ami be'Elokai echelokai. Rus had said, I'll be with you, and I'll be with your God. As I'll say, the original sin, when Lot leaves Avraham, when he goes to Sodom, the reason why Moab ends up in that area of the world in the first place is because Lot had turned his back on all of that, right? He pursues self-interest. And inevitably, when that happens, and at first, Lot can convince himself that he can pursue luxury and wealth and self-interest while also maintaining the ethic of chesed, He does achnasas orachim. He brings the malachim into his home. But what happens to his nation? They absorb the ethos of Sodom. Torah tells us in Kisei Tzeir, told them the Sefer Devarim, that the Moabi cannot intermarry. Why? Because they wouldn't come to give us bread or water to eat or drink. The refusal of chesed, which was the ethos of Sodom, becomes the refusal of chesed, that becomes the ethos of Lot's descendants, Ammon and Moab. Zephaniah is the Rebbe of Yirmiyahu at the end of the first case of Mikdash. So he says, black on white, Moab has turned into Sodom, Ammon has turned into Amorah. Lot went there, his descendants turned into their spiritual, intellectual, ethical heirs. Right? Last week we said, this is happening to Bnei Yisrael. At the end of Sefer Shoftim, Bnei Yisrael are turning into Sodom, which is extremely frightening. But the real people who turned into Sodom are Ammon and Moab, who are still living in that, neighborhood. Right? So one piece of Lot, one failure of Lot, is the abandonment of chesed in favor of self-interest, which of course Rus now is the total opposite of. And Rus is the radical exemplar of chesed, and Rus is the one who is going back, right? What Lot should have done, he never should have gone to that place in the first place, and Rus is the one going back, and not only she's going back, but she's bringing chesed with her back to the failing Bnei Yisrael. There's a little bit more to this as well. The Gemara says in Nazi, the Gemara quotes the Pasuk in the Mishle, Letava Yivakesh Nifrad. The one who separates will seek pleasure. Who is the one who separates who will seek pleasure? So Rava says, that's Lot. Letava Yivakesh Nifrad Ze Lot. Lot is the ultimate Nifrad, the ultimate separator. We saw when Lot separated from Avram, the Torah went back to it three times in a row. He paredna, he leaves to seek self-interest. And again, right? Rus, whose chesed means self-sacrifice, it is the total opposite. Now Chazal have fun bringing this out. Rashi has fun bringing this out when Lot hesitates to leave Sodom, Leis Mama. And what does Rashi comment? Why did Lot delay? Latzil Samono, he wanted to save his money. The Malach tells Lot, Himalayt al Nafshacha, flee for your life. What does Rashi say? You should be happy that you're alive. Stop trying to get more and more money. Because Lot begins by pursuing self-interest, it consumes him, and by the end, his nation has no room left for chesed. Once again, we're given the radical alternatives. We have the self-sacrifice of Rus, we have the self-interest and the self-pleasure of Lot. And self-pleasure gets us to the last piece, and the last piece where Moav typifies one arena and Rus provides the tikkun for that. And that is in the realm of Gilei Arayot. That is in the realm of sexual depravity. Where does Moav come from? So Moav comes from Me'av, comes from the daughters of Lot who sleep with their father in a cave. And the first daughter who does so has a son and names her from my father, Me'av. Now, why and how did that happen? And here we see the last piece of Rus's tikkun. So the Malach had told Lot to run, right? Himalit al nafshacha, where should you go? Hahara himalit, run to the mountain. Now, the pshat is that the mountain means, you know, the top of the Jordan, you know, you're on the Jordan River Valley, run up to the top of the mountain. Now, there has to be more to it than that, though, because, again, if you've ever driven through from Yerushalayim to the Dead Sea, so you know, those mountains are totally dry, right? It's total desert, those mountains over there. So Rashi explains, what is the mountain? Etzel Avraham Barach. Run to Avram. Avram's in Hebron. Avram is in Hare Yehuda, right? Hare Yoshev Bahar, Be'etek V'Sham Hahara. Avraham is traveling, he's planting his tent in the mountains of Hare Yehuda. So the Malach is telling Lot, go back to Avraham. Here is the moment of tshuva potential. Why did Lot leave? He left because he had too much stuff. He had too much money. Well, guess what, Lot? All the money is gone. All the livestock, all the cattle you had, which you couldn't bear to stay with Avraham, the land couldn't bear both of you, that's all gone. The money is gone. Now is the chance to go back and to reunite with Avraham. Lot doesn't do it, right? Instead, Lot says, no, Al na Adonai, right? I can't go back. I can't go back to Avraham. And instead he stays in Tsoar locally, and then he goes into one of the caves nearby. And then his daughters, what do his daughters say? Atar Rechel Altira, Avira Zakin, V'ish in Ba'aretz Lavoy, Lena Kedara Kola Aretz. Now, the pshat is that what are the daughters saying? There are other people out there that they could marry, but there's nobody who could continue the legacy of their father. There's nobody to continue Lot's legacy. Just like in the Megillah, we need somebody to be make him Zara, to continue the name, to continue the family legacy of Elimelech, maybe of Machlon Kilion, of Naomi, and that is what Ruth is going to do together with Boaz. We need somebody who can continue Lot's legacy. But the daughters say to each other, he can't do it, right? There's nobody here. We have no family connections left to continue the family name. So what do they say we have to do? They get their father drunk and let's sleep with our father instead. And the Gemara in, I think Horios it is, points out that Lot, yeah, he gets drunk, but he's also, there's an element of Taiva involved in there as well. Gemara says that Lot was not as completely clueless, especially the second time around, as he could have been. You know, there's an element of sexual depravity in Lot's behavior here. Now, I haven't seen this proposed, but I think it makes a lot of sense that ideally what should have happened? How should Lot's family legacy have continued after the destruction of Sodom? Well, where should Lot have gone? We said he should have gone back to Abraham. Happens to be Abraham has two eligible sons, right? This is right after Avram has been told he's going to have a child. Yitzchak is on the way. Sarah is pregnant with Yitzchak as we speak. Yishmael is still a good son at home. Lot has two daughters. Avraham has two sons. If Lot had gone back to Avraham at this moment, we could have had a reunification of the family. We could have kept everything. The Geula, just like the, you know, you have the nephew Boaz is going to step in the Megillah. We could have had Yishmael and Yitzchak there reunite with Lot's daughters to continue his own legacy. Everybody would have been reunited. The family would have been able to continue. And yet, Lot refuses to go back, and therefore his daughters go on a different track, which Chazal are of really two minds with. They're sensitive to the sympathetic element of it. There certainly is that. They're also sympathetic to the Gilei Arayos element of it. It's a very complicated step. And all of that is in stark contrast to the behavior of Rus. Or Rus, when she goes down to Boaz, and it is a situation where, I mean, the Megillah says that she pulled the cover off his legs. It sounds like my love Boaz is lying there naked in the middle of the night, you know, in a quiet field with nobody there. It's an exceptionally sexually laden scene, and yet absolutely nothing untoward happens whatsoever. Unlike the episode of the Daughters of Lot, unlike the episode of Tamar with Yehuda, there's absolutely not a touch of Gilei Arayos that happens with Rus and with Boaz. The sexual integrity, the avoidance of Gilei Arayos is there with her as well. And she's bringing that back. We saw last week what was happening in the realm of Gilei Arayos with Pelegesh Begiva. They were turning into Sodom from a chesed perspective, and then they become pleasure seekers. And the whole world of Gilei Arayos is willing to overthrow anything in the search for pleasure. It's not a coincidence that what happens to Moav, the Benos Moav at Shittim, they begin to commit zinus with the Bnei Yisrael. Moav becomes a society which is defined by two things: lack of chesed and sexual depravity. It all comes from this single-minded focus on self-interest and self-pleasure. That's what Sodom stood for. That's what Ammon and Moab stand for. That's what Bnei Yisrael begin to stand for by the end of Sefer Shoftim. And who is the total opposite of all of that? Who is the person who is not pursuing self-interest whatsoever, not pursuing self-pleasure whatsoever? Remember Boaz's line. He's like, you could have had any of the handsome young men running around, and you're coming to this like old, you know, declining guy, really? Rus is totally opposed to the world of Gilei Arayos, and she's totally opposed to the world that's the antithesis of Chesed. And in that regard, she is the one who is able to do what Lot was supposed to do all those years ago. Come back to Eretz Yisrael, reunite with Eretz Yisrael, and provide us with the next generation of leadership. the next generation of leadership, you know, the mother of Yaakov Avinu could have, the mother, grandmother of the Shvatim, it could have been Rus's daughter. It could have been Lot's daughters. It wasn't. So instead, Avram has to send Eliezer to schlep all the way to Haran to find a wife for Yitzhak because Lot couldn't come through. But now everything's, we come to this point in time, and Rus is providing the redemption not only to B'nai, to her family individually, but by bringing those values back, the lost values of Avraham, that the daughter of Lot, the descendant of Lot, has to bring back. She's able with her chesed, with her integrity, and with her her tznius and her opposition to Gilei Arayos to redeem B'nai Yisrael as well. So we'll stop here. If you have any questions, love to hear. But otherwise, Baruch Hashem, look forward to meeting back at 8 o'clock next week to talk about Boaz.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.